Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Ken Norton, 20 years of volunteer and career experience, currently fire training captain with North Myrtle Beach Fire Rescue. Ken always knew he wanted to become training captain to oversee and make others within his organization better, and he does this not to gloat or boast. Ken believes in outside training, getting out of your own bubble, and most importantly, being there as firefighters for each other. How can we depend on one another if we're not on speaking terms? Make it make sense. And when you hear Ken talk, you'll see why. With that, I present Mr. Ken Norton.
My name's Ken Norton. I'm the fire training captain at North Myrtle Beach Fire Department. I've been here about 7 years. Been career fire service for 17 years. I started off at Horry County Rescue as a volunteer in 2004. They had at the time had a program that was called support services. And ultimately you got to hang around the firehouse and, go to calls with the guys, but you couldn't be active and help them clean up and pack up and things like that. I was able to do that for about just shy of a year before I got into my first fire class. I did all that on a volunteer schedule. So that took about 8 months to get up to firefighter one. Well, actually at the time was OSHA firefighter. Before they went to fundamentals and everything. So that gave you your interior certifications. That was about 05, and then went through EMT school through the county. We got hired full-time with them in March of 2008. Spent almost 10 years there. Went to Midway Fire Rescue, another small beach department, not too far from us here in North Myrtle Beach. And then came on with North Myrtle Beach about 6 months later. And again, I've been here about 7 years. when I joined the fire service, when I left high school, well, the military was where I wanted to go. That was my number one option. And that didn't quite work out for me. I made some mistakes along the way. My dad died when I was 17. I was a senior in high school. And it was just me and my mom. And then her and I didn't see eye to eye anymore. So I kind of went down some wrong paths. And was making some very poor decisions. So luckily, that was a short stint. I had a friend of mine that was a volunteer with Horry County. And my whole life, I thought that you had to, like, go to school and, like, get on your own and get fire credentials that way before you could get picked up by fire department. I had no idea that they would hire you and put you through the training or that you could even do that as a volunteer. So I jumped through that. Got on board with that, with volunteering. And when I set foot into a classroom and my very first fire instructor, Neil Bell, who is now a retired battalion chief, first 5 minutes that man opened his mouth, that told me that this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And he was so passionate and motivated about the job, and he made me feel that. And I owe a big debt of gratitude to him for that. And that led me to where I am. And I knew there was, if it could be done in the fire service, I wanted to do it. I wanted to be a part of it in every way that I could, and I wanted to grow. And because of the influence he had on me in that classroom that day, is I knew that I wanted to be a training officer one day. And because of him and Billy Floyd, guys like that who have mentored me as instructors and showed the passion for the job and the fire service. So worked out great. I think I got a better option than going into the military, but I love what I do, and I wouldn't have traded all my mistakes that I made for anything, because those mistakes is what led me to doing what I'm doing today.
Okay. All right. Love it. Love hearing it. So I'm taking it you have no other family members within the fire service or anything of that nature?
No, sir. My father was he grew up a poor tobacco farmer. And then my mom, she had, miscellaneous jobs as I was growing up. And her last, like, full-time job, she was a project manager for a big construction company here in Myrtle Beach. And, no fire service background through the family, no military background through family, none of that stuff. It was go to school, go to work, go home, repeat.
Okay. So with your with your upbringing, where once you stepped in that room and you found that instructor who obviously lit a torch under you, what would you say to an individual that's looking to find someone, either you could say either to mentor or to emulate? Because obviously he had a very big, path or trajectory on you to where you are
Sure.
now.
Mentoring to me is a big thing. Finding that mentor, sometimes it happens organically, and sometimes you are just keyed in on specific people. I don't think when Neil Bell stood up in front of that classroom that day, he may not have known that he was going to have the impact that he had on me, almost 20 years later. But he didn't let that deter him for how much he cared about the job. And I truly believe that if it's what I would say is passive mentoring, like you're leading by example, you're always doing the right things, you're showing how much you love what you do, how much you care for your people. And then you have that direct mentoring where you're just taking that person under your wing and so forth, you have the ability to make an impact in anybody's life in a 24-hour shift. You can walk into a room and never have met this person, and you have the ability to make their whole career just that one shift alone. It could be a 20-minute conversation, and that could be your future fire chief based on that 10-minute conversation, that 20-minute conversation. If you care about what you do and you care about the people that you are around and the impact that you're going to make, if it's selfless, if you're more concerned about where they're going to end up and how they're going to view this job, because so many other people depend on what we do. If you're selfless and you're not doing it for your own vanity or any of your own pats on the back, it's going to come natural. It's truly going to be impactful. And a lot of times those guys don't have to go look for mentors because they've already found it just on that interaction that you've had with them.
Okay. All right. So you step into the room, you get your credentials, you get hired on at first with Horry County, correct?
Yes, sir.
Your first assignment, who did you surround yourself with? Like, you know what I mean? Because you're green, you're new at this point, so you're getting your feet wet.
I was blessed from day one. I ended up working my Bucksport Station 3. It's just outside of Georgetown County. A little bit of a slower house at the time. It was known to be a slow house. And the funny part is, I can talk about it now, but when I went through career rookie school, Neil was one of our lead instructors, and they used to joke about sending us to Bucksport. And everybody's, oh, what's wrong with Bucksport? Oh, it's a slow house, and blah blah blah. I'm like, okay, cool. So we take the licks on that. Well, I got assigned to Bucksport. Luckily, I got assigned with another recruit graduate of mine from my class, Aaron Prevel, who is still to this day a good friend of mine. He's no longer in the fire service though around here. And Adam Lee, he was the paramedic on duty there. And at the time, we had five assigned to that house, and we rolled out an engine, a tanker, and an ambulance. So luckily, me and Prevel, being the two rookies, we got to rotate between the engine, the tanker, and the ambulance. I wasn't by myself, so I didn't just get stuck to the ambulance. Adam Lee, I owe a lot. I became a paramedic later in my career, and I owe a lot to him as to why I became a paramedic and the type of paramedic that I became. And this dude is almost 20 years in full time with Horry County still, and he still jumps on the ambulance every day, never promoted up, never complains, goes out and does what is expected of him, and has one of the best bedside manners. He's always killing it as a patient care provider, but he will go down a dirty hallway and he can pump fire engines. He can do it all, and he never complains about any of it. So that dude was one of the first career fire service members. And he's going to talk mad smack when he hears this. I know he is. But I do owe a lot to him and his impact and his attitude and how he was. He didn't care that he was in Bucksport. He smiled every day. He loved being at work. He loved being on the job. He loved what he was doing. He was pretty happy when me and Prable got there because we would stay up till 2 in the morning and watch movies. And we did fireman stuff, and that was kind of how I learned what it was to be like in the firehouse, because I had never done that for a 24-hour duty shift. So he was very impactful. And then fortunately, me, him, and Preble, we bargained to get out of there. I got recruited by a captain to go out to Station 15, which was at the fire academy, at our fire training center there. And it was also a relatively busy house, considering that it was a rural house. Michael Dozier, company officer, a guy that you just interviewed not long ago, he and I were firemen together there. Yet Dozier was two classes ahead of me. And as you know, speaking of which, got to Station 15. There's another dude that made a huge impact on me, and we were pretty fortunate to have a pretty solid captain that cared about our futures and guided us in the direction that we needed to go in our careers.
All right. So you stayed at Horry County for how many years?
Just shy of 10.
Just shy of 10. And then you transitioned to what was that department name before you mentioned?
Midway Fire.
Midway. Okay. My question.
I'm
No, go
sorry, go
ahead.
ahead.
No, go
No,
ahead.
you
Go
go
ahead.
right ahead. I
Okay.
just, I got through Midway out there, man. I love those guys. And when I in my time off between Horry County and North Myrtle Beach, I had already tested here, but there was no vacancies. And
Okay.
so I was waiting on a vacancy, and I was in limbo. I was working at a private ambulance company, just miserable. And Midway gave me the break that I needed, and they gave me some love. So I got to always show love to them. I hated leaving there after only 6 months, but just wanted them to know that they helped me out in a tough time in my life.
Okay. So this next question, and only if you want to answer it, but I think it can play a key role or vital to anyone that's contemplating. You spent 10 years at Horry County. That's no easy feat. I mean, you're vested then.
Yes, sir.
What triggered your response to leave after 10 years to go to another organization? Because we have people right now that are debating whether the place that they're at is for them.
Sure. To say this as professionally as possible, and to let off, like, Horry County is still my family. I still got a lot of folks there that showed me love, and I love them all dearly, and I pray daily for their success. And we still work with them hand in hand. They come and train with us, and we go and train with them, and they host classes that we can send our people to. but without, in so many words, my time was up there. It was time for me to move, and it may not have been fully consensual. All right, just by some other things that had taken place, and ultimately, at the end of the day, my vision and their vision didn't align, and it was no longer time for me to be there.
No, I totally get it, because I feel like, unfortunately, that's going on in the fire service world, where you come in as a brand new candidate, you're happy to be there, and then once you get some time under your belt and you start noticing things, because the biggest thing for me is when you go into Horry County, they have an expectation of you. And
Sure.
so, I think it's got to be a two-way street. And that's why I asked, because there's some people that might not be happy where they're at. And so my thing is, if you feel like the organization is not living up to your standards, and maybe you should make that move to go somewhere else and find a place
Sure.
where you feel like you belong.
So I can elaborate to that a little bit, because being at Midway, man, I had established such good relationships, and I still have those relationships. One of the guys that I really came close to, Joey Anderson, is now a fireman here. He works for us as well. And I hated to leave. I honestly hated it. But at the end of the day, after being on the job for 10 years, I knew that coming to North Myrtle Beach was going to be the best decision for my family and for the longevity of my career. And I knew North Myrtle Beach had something to offer me, that was going to provide what I needed, not just in my career, but at home. And Not that Midway did not do that to a certain extent, because that's not a jab at them by no means. I hate to say, well, they're just better. You know, I never believed that the grass is greener on the other side. I endured a lot of hardships, you know, at my first organization just because of growth and transitions and leadership transitions, things of that nature. I never once made moves for myself. You know, I did it for the loyalty of that organization. But when I left Midway, that was something I had to do for me. So I'd say when you make that decision, don't go because, oh, well, the pay is better. They got nicer rigs, the call volume, this, that. There's 100 million reasons that you could choose to go somewhere else. But you really have to look down in your heart and determine that that is going to be the decision best for you. And at the time, I had 3 kids. Now I have 4. And I have a fireman's wife. That woman has endured a lot in the fire service world with me, and she was there from the beginning, when I graduated rookie school. And so I had to make a decision based on her and my family and where I was going to be at in the next 5 to 10 years. And sometimes that's a roll of the dice. It may not end up what you think is going to end up, but you have to make that decision. And you got to make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. If that makes sense, I hope I didn't kind of go off.
100%. Nope. 100%. I totally get where you're coming from, and that's what I was hoping you would you know, say to elaborate. And I love how you mentioned, you know, we have departments. It's like a lottery or a draft, man. You have departments that'll pop. This is what I'm paying, and then so the next department will do a pay study and go, well, we'll pay a couple. You know what I mean? Like we're robbing from each other, and some people are moving just for pay, and it's not always about the pay. If the culture's not right, but the pay is good, you know, like you gotta figure out which one you'll be able to withstand. So I get it 100%.
That is a fact. And it coming from the volunteer side of things, I mean, we did it without pay. Sometimes we would get paper call if you signed a paper call, but
Right.
I definitely the funny thing is talking about that, like I onboarded a new hire not too long ago, and we were talking about things of this caliber, and he goes, "Hey, I don't care if what the check is, as long as the check clears." And I said, "That is an absolutely positive attitude to have, and you should feel that way because that's what we do. We're not, you know, yeah, we like getting paid, but we still got to put food on the table. But we're not as concerned about our pay as we are about what it is we do, the quality of our training, the quality of the equipment that we have to go perform our duties." However, I will say there will come a point in time in your life you gotta be concerned about the paycheck. If you have 4 children and you know that college ain't cheap, school ain't cheap, sports ain't cheap, but there are things that you can do in your career to help you progress through that. And North Myrtle Beach has afforded me that. They have completely afforded me to be able to be comfortable in my life. So sometimes you do have to think about those things, but at the end of the day, we're firemen, and we have a duty, and a lot of times it doesn't have anything to do with what our monetary value is.
100%, 100%. Well stated, well stated. All right, so I'm going to fast forward a little bit. You get hired on with North Myrtle Beach. You move up through the ranks, where you know, you ended up being on squad number 3 as lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
So my next question for you, and I know the reason why I asked this is because I know a good number of people that might want to go down this path. So my question is, why the training division? And when it was proposed to you, what was your immediate reaction?
So we didn't have a training captain. We only had a division chief of training, and that was Chief Floyd.
Okay.
But that's a hard job. That's a lot for one man to do because he was also managing administrative duties and basically helping the department grow and build a department with Chief Spain. So Chief Spain, it was in the works that they were going to ask for a training captain. They ended up getting a deputy chief, which Chief Floyd ended up moving into, and then Chief Full became the division chief of training. So they pushed the training captain spot back for 1 year. So it's funny because Chief Floyd says to me, "This works out good because when Chief Full got promoted to the division chief, I got promoted to the lieutenant. That opened up a couple of lieutenant's vacancies." And he goes, "This will be good because this will give you a year back as a company officer." And then that training captain's position comes up, and you go give them the business, and you show them you're serious about this job. He knew I wanted that job. He knew that's something I had aspired to do for 7 years prior to that. Everybody knew that. And it all boils back down to that interaction throughout my career with all those quality training officers that they made a difference in a lot of people's lives, and they developed a lot of great firemen.
So I just want to get a sense for others to hear. A lot of people, or I don't want to say a lot of people, some people, if offered that position, would, yeah, all right, I'm coming off the truck. I most likely am going 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. You have a plethora, depending on how big your organization is, of, all right, how am I going to do this? So you wanted to do it, but like, why? You know what I mean? Because training, some don't want to do that, but we have
Sure.
individuals out there that once they get in that position and they thrive, like they love it.
I knew that I knew I was going to miss 24/48s. I knew I was going to miss getting on a rig and being in the firehouse with the guys. I knew that I was cutting out a lot of the things I loved about my job. I loved about being a fireman. But I, without a shadow of a doubt, hands down, I wanted to help make better firemen. In whatever way that I could, I wanted to give everything that I had to offer to develop our firemen. And I knew that our department was getting ready to grow very rapidly because of some changes that had taken place. And I wanted to be a part of it to help develop it because I felt that I felt confident that I had something to offer. And I didn't build this on my own. I was blessed to have worked with a lot of great officers that helped me get to this point and develop me. And I knew that I needed to get that out there. I knew that I could do that, and I could hands-on train people how to perform their duties to the best of their ability. I knew I was confident in my knowledge of the job up to the company officer level that I could help you achieve your goal, not just to make you better, but to get you where you want to be. If you want to be an officer one day, I feel confident that I can help you get there. If you want to be the best engineer or the best pump operator there is, I felt confident that I could. If I personally could not provide you with that, I knew that I had resources to provide you to get there. I knew I could put you in direction, put you in contact with people. I knew I could do it. I just knew I could. I ain't never been so confident about anything in my life, but I knew that I could do this.
Awesome. Okay. Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, with being a training captain, you're able to see the men and women that work for your organization come in. Hey, these are certain skills. Like, you're able to watch people's strengths and weaknesses. So my question for you would be, what do you do if you notice an individual who, as soon as the time comes where you have mandatory company training, they're off, or they're sick, or they just somehow miss that training? What do you do to instill? So, like, what do you do in with someone that does that? But what do you also do with someone who every time they get there, man, they're just like, oh, I'm not into it. I don't want to do this, when it's their job?
Loaded question, sir. Strap in. If my phone starts ringing, I might be in trouble. But anyway, so yes, that's definitely a difficult situation to be in. One of the ways we go about this is we try to one, encourage the company officers to promote positive attitudes towards our training. If it, the annual burns, or last year we did vent inner search training in the middle of July, and everybody, I knew it was going to be some grumbles, but everybody came out and killed it. They all had great attitudes. We scheduled it so we weren't doing it in the hot part of the day. I am fortunate. We have a small membership, so I feel that I know our people pretty well, and not that I have to cater to them. but I can be empathetic and I can have an understanding of how they're going to feel about something when we conduct training. And if you have the one that is either grumbling when they get there, or maybe they don't show up for work the day that we have that training, that's where that counseling comes in the session of, this is what we do, and this is what you need to understand about what we do. And I may reference certain materials, like I'm reading the training officer guidebook right now, and one of the statements in there, it says, or excuse me, handbook. One of the statements in there, it says, you're training people to make a decision. Like the whole section of the book is named decision. And I try to and force to them that you are going to end up in a position where you're going to have to make a decision. And that's either you make the decision to do what is best for the people we are serving and that we swore that we would go to when they need us, or you're going to make a decision for yourself. And which of those decisions do you want to make? And how do you want to make this decision? Well, this training that we're doing, everything that we're doing is a building block to the day you have to make that decision. And I'd be lying to you if I told you that we reach 100% of the people that are going to buy into that. But my days of getting in their face and yelling at people and telling them, giving them the business are over with. I'm just going to keep it real with you and say, this is what we do. This is what you signed up for. And sometimes we can't say it, but the cold hard truth is, if you can't do it and you don't want to do it, then you should probably pick a different career. And sometimes that's a hard thing to have a conversation about. And you mean it with love, because I've met some of the greatest people in the world that just didn't cut it at the job. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter how much you encourage them, and it doesn't matter how much you work with them. Sometimes they cannot get it done.
Right.
Hope
No,
that makes sense.
it does. It does for me, because because if you see it, you know for sure your organization sees it. You know what I mean? Like firemen are like really good detectives, so they'll be like, all right, we got oh, such and such not here. Imagine, you know what I mean? Like imagine that. So that's what I wanted to ask. Okay. All right.
And with that being said, just something to add on to that, that it's also part of my job and that I encourage the company officers. It's also a company officer's job and our job in the training division. When we identify those things, we must also identify the strengths of those people, and utilize those strengths to our advantage and for the betterment of us. So, I cannot sit here and say that I found people that were just full of weaknesses. I could never say that. I have found plenty of strengths in people that may not be as solid on the fire ground as we want them to be, but they were awesome in other areas that could be directed. And if we're directing those people and where would they need to be at, because we know they're staying around, right? They're not going anywhere. So if we direct that positive energy and those good things about them, it's going to work out for everybody. And that sometimes is easier said than done. But I don't want to just say, hey, I'm writing anybody off that ain't cut the mustard on the fire ground, because that's not the case, because I found a lot of strengths in people.
Okay, perfect, perfect, perfect. My first official question to you, going off the list here, is what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh man, so there's a million definitions of that one lately, and I've been listening to your show, and I love hearing the differences. One of your last guys, Gutierrez, he gave a solid interview, and he mentioned about Chief Scott Thompson's saying that aggressiveness is the standard. Like that, what we do is naturally aggressive. So I add to that, to the fact that everybody's level of aggressiveness is going to be different. Our job is dangerous. Going and doing some of the things that we do is dangerous. And if we're doing it to the best of our capability, whether it's shagging that line down that dirty hallway, it's doing that vent inner search at that second or third floor at his three-story raised beach house, getting that ladder up or getting that window, if that's what you're supposed to do. That is what you're called to do. And that is aggressiveness in and of itself. And again, everybody's level of aggressiveness is different, because some folks would say, well, the way he threw that ladder, or how he got that line in there, blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe they don't have the capability of doing the high shoulder carry. Is that aggressive? Or no, they got the ladder up there quickly, efficiently, and it's working. It may not have been the ideal. Well, that person's 4'7" and you're 6'5". So yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a difference there. But I will stand by the fact that what we do is naturally aggressive if we're doing it right. If we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and we're doing it the way that we're supposed to do it 100% of the time, it's going to be aggressive. There is nothing not aggressive about going into a burning building. And I'll take it a step further. Our EMS care is the same way. We talk about aggressive paramedicine and aggressive pre-hospital care. Like, if you're working a code the way that you're supposed to, you're administering the medications that you're supposed to, you're documenting, you're doing all those things. That is aggressive. If you just sit over in the captain's chair and don't do any of those things, then no, you're not doing your job. So yeah, you're not being aggressive because you're not doing your job. So if you do your job, it's going to be aggressive. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be nasty. It's going to be scary, and it's going to be dangerous.
Love it. Love it. All right. All right. For you personally, what's your niche in training? Everyone has their go-to topic or subject. So what's yours?
Engine company operations. I was assigned to Truck One. That was when we put it in service as a career staff unit a couple years ago. I came in Horry County. You had to do it all. You just because you weren't assigned to an actual apparatus ladder truck, you still may had to have done ladder work. You maybe have to do truck company operations. So you got to dabble in a little bit of everything. But where I got my most experience was it was that front left seat behind that wheel, pumping and then moving hand lines down hallways. Anything to do with putting water on fire, putting water in the line, anything off of an engine company, that would, to me, I am the most confident in. And I kind of arrogantly put that in my engineer when I promoted to engineer. I put that in my application. It says, I can't remember how it worded, but basically, it had levels, and it was like novice, this, that, and expert. I put expert. I'm probably not an expert, or I know I'm not an expert, but I am most certainly confident in that area because that's where we all started. I cannot sit here and say I rode a truck company long enough and did a truck company work long enough to say that that's my caveat. But definitely engine company operations. I love everything about it. And then when I get around people who are full up with that, like Jonah Smith from Hornet Fire Training, if you've ever heard of him or follow any of his stuff, man, talk about a dude that will reignite what you know about engine company operations. Aaron Fields, I got to take his class, also just got me hyped up about it. Like, it's like one of the coolest things there is to do when it comes to the fire ground, other than making a grab, obviously. But there is something about forcing a door. And getting that nozzle in the door and going down into some nastiness, that is just, yep, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm supposed to be. That's where I'm supposed to be. And I feel confident in passing that information along, showing guys how to get lines on the ground, showing them how to shag them efficiently and effectively, making a push up stairwell, all of those things. And I didn't invent it. I was just privileged enough to be able to take classes and learn from others who were very good at it. And I got to go to a lot of fire when I worked at Horry County, rural and inner city areas. We had a two-man engine crew, and you were usually doing drop tank operations. So you better have your stuff together when you know your next dude is 15 minutes away, and you got 1,000 gallons of water on board. You got to set up this drop tank back into this driveway at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's a lot of variables. So I had to put my big boy pants on and learn very quickly. So 20 years later, I feel like that's what I'm still good at.
Okay. And that's the thing too. Like, I feel like everyone should have a, I think if you're going to be in this type of profession, I think you should have that kind of bravado about you, because you don't want to second guess yourself. You don't want to go, what if? Because to me, that deters you from actually doing the job.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay. Next official question. Should there be a years of service clause for promotion?
For sure. Ideally, yes, always. And I understand that's not always possible. We are fortunate here at our department. We had a huge influx of new membership back in 2020. Excuse me. And so we had a lot of guys really shined, and they really took to the job, and they moved out relatively quickly due to the ratio of new personnel to seasoned personnel in our department. So yeah, yes, ideally yes, but right now we have a new rank structure. So we have a firefighter first class, which is ultimately a driver operator, and if you meet the requirements, you make your way through the driver operator handbook, which is just pumper only. You make F1C. Then we go to engineer, which is a competitive process based on, vacancies, et cetera. And the same thing for any rank above that. Well, to become an engineer, you have to be with the department for at least 2 years, and you have had to have been an F1C for 1 year. Even Fire Chief and I have talked about it before. We'd love for that to be more, but we feel that's a reasonable number at the engineer rank. And then our engineers, they act up as officers when the situation arises as well. And the same thing for lieutenant. You have to have 4 years with the organization, and you had to have been a engineer for at least 2 years. So the way it's set up, those progressions, you can't skip any of those progressions. You can't go from Joe Fireman to a lieutenant. So you have to go through the ranks, and in order to get to the next step, you have to have served time in those positions. And then when you get to captain, you have to have 5 years with organization, 6 years for battalion chief. And yes, ideally, we would also like those to be more, but your area, your department, everything, there's so many variables there that may dictate whether or not you have that window, that time and service window.
Okay. All right. Understood. Understood. 100%. Okay. With you being the training captain, what's your take on outside training? Like, what's your take on firefighters that want to go out to conferences? And if you have a firefighter come to you, they go, "Hey, Cap, I'd love to see if the department can bring in said person to teach whatever." Are you for outside training?
100%. I encourage it. I look for it. We have done it a lot here in our department. That is one thing that we are so blessed about in our department. We constantly do that. We did a little joint operation with the Saltwater Fools, our local Fools chapter here, where we brought in Hornet Fire training, and it was just for us and Fools members, and they used our training facility. Fire Chief is always backing that up. We send guys to outside classes throughout the country. I just got back from Texas. I did an RTI swift water rescue class and a swift water boat tech class in Texas for a week. We got Chief Nick Ray and his people from North Spartanburg Fire. They do a pretty awesome conflict resolution training. They're coming in next, or excuse me, in July. The list goes on, man. We have had so many outside people. Michael Dozier came and did his class here for us. And we're sending guys to some a large animal rescue class up in Brunswick County across the state line here. That is not an issue here. We encourage it, we love it, and it's great when some of these folks go out and they take these classes outside of our bubble, how they light up when they come back and find out that there's other people that are as much into the job as they are. And they find that my first trip to FDIC in 2014 is what opened my eyes to that. And I learned, like, holy cow, like, there's a lot of people that really love the job, man. So when they get to go out, and it's got to be reputable, man. We ain't sending people to no nonsense. Like, we check them out, we do our homework, we make sure that they're credible people. And but the return on that, even if they go out and they don't learn a skill that just knocks your socks off, just them being in the presence of these people who give such passion and care so much about the job and promote such good energy about what it's like to be a fireman, that goes a long way. And these jokers bring it back and they bring it to the firehouse and then they're eat up with it and they want more and they want to keep on going. Like, what's the next one we can do? And when you have the support that we have from your admin, because I know that's not possible for a lot of people, I totally understand that. But that is one area that we are blessed in. Our admin supports it. Our city officials support that type of stuff. And they find the money for us one way or another. They figure it out. They figure out how to get us there. They figure out how to feed us, and they figure out how to register for us for the classes. So I'm all about outside stuff, man.
Awesome. Because sometimes you hear, when traveling that some people will pay for it on their own dime. Some are told you can't take issued gear, out there, but there are companies out there and individuals who are changing that to bring awareness, like, hey, if you can't bring your gear, but you're still coming, like, we have a way for you to participate. And I think that having a training captain that is for outside training, that yes, I want my men and women to go out and come back and teach us things, maybe that we can, maybe plug and play here and there for our tactics is awesome, because unfortunately you have some that don't like that, they will shoot you down on that.
Yeah, well, you know why? And I, no jab at nobody in particular, but they're afraid that somebody's going to go out there and find out that they're full of it. And they're going to be put out in the spotlight that maybe they're not as good as they say they are or promote themselves to be. And I'd like to think that I make sure right away I'm not where the buck stops. I'm not a subject matter expert at any of this stuff. So you're going to go out there and some of these people are just going to blow your minds at how good they are at what they do. So don't come back here expecting that I am as good as they are. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when we have a process for when these guys want to take these classes, they send it up. I'm like, absolutely. And then there are times I have to say, yeah, this one ain't gonna cut it, man. We can't do that. And I give them a valid explanation as to why we cannot do it. And there's a bunch of variables involved. But when there are ones that are, I go up to the fire chief or my division chief, and they're like, all right, well, you can send five. I said, well, I need to send six. They were like, why? Like, because I want to go. Right? I'm not, I want to go to the class too. I'm not done with this. Like, and then again, not a jab at anybody else, but a lot of folks don't want people to know anything outside of their bubble because in their bubble, they're the superstar. And if they go outside that bubble and people learn that there's good ways or better ways or different ways, or just if there's more in general, it's, they may be afraid of the reaction that they receive. And
No,
again, that's
no.
not a jab at anybody in particular.
No, no,
I don't want anybody.
no. I mean, that's why I asked, because there are people that some people know, like, yes, that is this individual. But what I love the fact is that you yourself go out to learn more, because it's impossible to know everything in the fire service world. But to
Yep.
me, there's no better feeling than seeing, like, if you're my training captain, hey, I'm going to this class. Oh, I'm gonna go too. Like, that's awesome. It makes your guys go, okay, cap's invested. Well, then I'm gonna be invested.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Okay. Let's talk about physical fitness. It's to me, it feels like a subject that people have to tiptoe around, and I don't really understand it, because doing what we do is not easy. S
Not at all.
statistics show, firefighters, injuries, deaths, cardiac related, like, our job is not easy. But yet we have organizations, places around the country where it's like, well, we can't say anything to this person, even though they know, like, I don't want to be a liability. I want to be an asset. And there are departments that are doing great things. South Metro, their training facility with all the equipment that they got for their personnel, I think that's what needs to happen more, but it's still an issue in the fire service of physical fitness, because we all know that one person that when they come into work, we're going to go out and, like for instance, my organization allows me an hour a day to work out. But we know people that come in, and while you go work out, they're going to go sit on the couch for that hour. And it's like, why do we continue to do that? So how important is physical fitness for in your opinion?
It's probably one of the most important tools that we have, because I can teach you everything there is to know about the fire service and give you all this knowledge and show you how to perform these skills. But if you are not conditioned to be able to perform those tasks at high intensity, fast paced, from a dead sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's so many variables of how much this job wears and tears on our body. And you already mentioned it, injuries, work-related injuries, being physically conditioned. And I don't really refer to it a lot of times as fitness, because I think there's two different things going on there. I refer to it as conditioning, because I tell our guys, hey man, you do not have to be a power lifter. You do not have to bench press 405, and you do not have to be able to run a 4-minute mile. If you can do those things, it's going to be a tremendous help to you, and it will translate to the fire ground. However, if you're doing things to condition your body and you're putting it under stress inoculation, if you're putting it under stress on a periodic basis, daily, shiftly, however you want to do it, you are conditioning yourself, and your body will perform the way that it needs to. Your breathing, your heart rate, your muscular strength, all of these things is going to prevent injury. You're going to be more successful in the fire ground. You're going to get back in the game quicker. Your recovery is going to be better. There's just so many variables. And, we do a agility test here, or excuse me, ability test, a performance ability test annually here. And it's just basically a shortened combat challenge. So when we started this program a couple of years ago, it's been, I think it's second or third year, we're kind of rolling into it now. Our guys bought into it, and when they first did it, they were like, I'm going to do better than that. And they did. A lot of guys recognized that they had some things that they needed to work on, and they did it. And then now they show up to do it, and they're all competing against each other to do it. And then they know that it's going to translate to the fire ground. It's going to help them live longer. You know what I mean? There's so many benefits from being having physical fitness or having that conditioning to for your longevity. You're going to be able to go home and pick up your kids. You're going to and play with your kids and throw the ball. I could go on for days about this. I'm a big advocate for physical fitness, and anybody listening to this that knows me, they know exactly why and where all that came from. I was a 286-pound sack of potatoes once upon a time in my life. And when I got into the fire service and I took my first annual physical, I was 24-ish, something like that, and I was a smoker. Lady looked at me and said, if you don't stop, you're going to die before you're 40. Well, that hit hard, because my dad died at 50. So I'm like, all right, I got to make a change. So I did what was necessary, because I found out that I needed to be better to do my job. I needed to be better or in better shape in order to perform my duties. Throwing a 24 by yourself is not easy. Trying to make a push down a hallway by yourself is not easy, especially if you come from a limited manpower department where your boss is reconning and you're trying to get this line to the door. That's not easy work. You have to have some physical strength, but you have to have it well placed. You can't just go out and do miscellaneous things and expect it to come naturally after that. You have to have a regimen. And if your people are struggling, you have to provide them with the resources and the coaching in order to get them to that point as well, which our department did a great job of. We have every firehouse has a gym of some kind. They have an abundance of workout equipment. We have a wellness committee that's there for them at the drop of a hat. We got a bunch of guys throughout our department that are physical fitness trainers of some kind, and they're constantly helping each other out. Like, these guys get it, man. They know what's up. They know that they have to have a little bit of pep in their step, and this is how it's going to happen. And it shows every time they show up to training drills and things of that nature. These cats kill it. And a lot of dudes that had some struggles before that admittedly had struggles and said, hey, man, I suck at this. I got to fix this. They've come back and they've knocked it out of the park. So I've seen it happen. Working, a good friend of mine, Mike Medeiros, he basically wrote the wellness plan for Horry County, where I worked at. And his numbers didn't lie. And you, at the time, you were talking about 400 personnel, 400 firemen in this department. And workman's comp claims went down. They were doing an agility test that people were just blowing numbers out of the water as far as their times and how they were completing it. It just, the proof is in the pudding. Physical fitness, physical conditioning are, you got to have it. And if you don't like lifting weights and you don't like running, throw your turnout gear on, put on an air pack, go put a ladder up, go pull a line. All of those things, those are applicable things to your job duties. So there's no excuse, because if you've got a fire apparatus in your firehouse, you have equipment to work out with. Go force a door, take a sledge and beat a tire. All of those things, you have to condition yourself to be successful on a fire ground. And
I
other
love
people depend on you to do that. My kid, when you're having to come and get my kid, I hope he was not having to worry about you sitting on the couch and not getting on the treadmill or not, getting that physical conditioning in. It is what it is.
No, well said, well said. And that's the problem I have, me personally, is when you have an individual that just likes to sit on the recliner, or the complaints, well, we don't have any equipment, I don't have this. There's so many different avenues that you just stated, but the key thing is the public. The public expects when we show up that we have to do our job, and it's not a good look when said person is huffing and puffing and they're shedding gear, needing IVs from EMS because they're just completely out of it. Like, so I love hearing that coming from you. And
Hey.
it's a testament that you changed your ways after it was told, hey, if you don't do this, there's a good chance this is going to happen.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, they come first. The people that we serve come first. And then I have four boys and a beautiful wife, and they also are part of my first list. And I want to go home to them. When I'm here and I get called out and I got to go take care of business for our community, then they come first. But my wife and kids come first by me taking care of myself so I can return home. I mean, that's a big thing. A lot of duty deaths due to, physical conditions. You know what I mean? And it's sad, but it's true. And some of those things are preventable, and it's easily prevented.
Absolutely, absolutely. And four boys, that is a very active household, I would say.
You don't even know, brother. Let me tell you.
Oh boy. Okay. Let's hit the last topic of wellness and truly being there for one another. You know,
Oh man.
the term brotherhood is, it's great, but it can be thrown around, and when you expect that brother or sister to come help and no one's there to help you know, that's where the issue lies. So what's your take on wellness and truly being there for one another?
That's huge, man. It's the saying that nobody's coming for us but us. You know, that was more of applied to on the fire ground and in mayday situations, but a lot of us miss the mark of understanding we should probably be coming to them more inside the firehouse than on the fire ground. And it's something that it's a tough it's one, people don't want to talk about it. That's it. That's an even more difficult situation. And as a company officer, I have been put in positions that, when they do want to talk about it, like you're not expecting when that door shuts what the next thing they're going to say is. And you better be ready. And if you don't know how to address it, you better find a way, because their mental wellness and their well-being from that point forward is now on your shoulders. And I hate this. Is some people say, well, don't put that burden on me. Tough break. That is what it is. That's what we do. And we spend our careers training ourselves and making sure that we are the best that we can be to go out and help total strangers, but we won't do a dang on thing in the firehouse for our own people. And we will ignore problems, and we will whisper behind their back instead of pulling them to the side and hitting it head on and being there for them. It could be a 10-minute opening your ears and listen to what they got to say. It could be taking your boy on a fishing trip. It could be going out to have lunch. Cut out all the vices of the things that we find comfort in. And I'm not throwing shade because I'm guilty of it myself. So all these things that we find comfort in that aren't good for us, your most departments now, because of the era that we live in, we have resources. We, everybody, not just company officers, should have awareness of how to use those resources and how to get to them and how to get those resources to the people that deserve it. I'm not embarrassed to say it. I've used our EAP program and I've went and I've had counseling because I was having issues between job transition, wife, kids, felt like the world was weighing down on my shoulders. But now one of the biggest takeaways that I got from that was now I know how I can help somebody else. And I'm not saying that because I need somebody to feel sorry for me by no stretch of the imagination, but I am not embarrassed to say it. And I'm actually proud that I did it because it helped me. It was better than some other paths I could have gone down. So now that I know how beneficial it is, I can make sure that I'm outspoken about it to others and help them understand that it's there. Go use it for whatever your problem may be. I may not be able to relate to their problem, but again, one of the main characteristics we need to have in the fire service or in any public safety field is empathy. We have to have empathy. And we have to be able to be that shoulder and concern and care. So, nobody's coming for us but us, but it's in the firehouse is probably the most important time. It could be sitting around out in the bay and telling dirty jokes to one another and carrying on. And then don't let it stop there. Make sure you're checking on them when they're at home because you don't know what they're going through when they leave the firehouse. Hell, you don't know what people are going through when they walk into your firehouse on their first day. Right? So we don't know anybody's history. The reason that they are there could be was whatever the result of their past was or things that they've gone through in their lives. So it's critically important to make sure that we're understanding people's mental well-being. And we know the statistics are there. Anybody in the public safety, military, suicide rates, it's sad. And it's another topic people don't want to talk about, but guess what? It's there and it's not going away. It's not going to change anything. We can be the change in that if we're catching on to those cues and we're understanding what, the differences in people or what, how they're presenting themselves. And sometimes just asking that question could be the barrier broken down that they needed broken down. And just ask them, hey, what's good, man? However you want to approach it. And you'd be surprised at how many people might break down and just tell you everything. But then you can't be afraid to follow up with it either. Some people will do it, say, oh, wish I hadn't asked that, but you're in it now, man. Help a brother out or sister, doesn't matter. Be there for them. And listen, another proponent of that, when I left Horry County, again, we kind of touched on that, but I had an outpouring of support of people that I had no idea would have been there. I'm talking about showing up and people buying my meals, my family. There's so many variables. I know that I had a support system, and I hope that I could ever repay that and be that person for somebody else one day. So it's there. I know that the brotherhood is there, and it may not be what our quote unquote typical brotherhood thing is, what some people are or want it to be. We could go on for a long time about this, but I know it's there. I hope my people know that I love them and they know that I'll care about them regardless of our differences. And that's another big
That's a
important part. If they
big.
know that you love them, they know that you care about them and that you're going to be there for them, it's not going to be hard for them to come to you about it.
No, definitely, definitely. And I love how you mentioned the differences. We don't all have to agree on things. It's okay to disagree, Well, as long as we treat each other with the respect, and I feel like that's a problem we have. You know, it's like, oh, if you don't see my viewpoints, we're done. I don't want to talk to you. And it's
Yeah.
like, we can't be like that.
Yep. Nobody
Look.
wants to get create in a rig with somebody like that. You know what I mean? Like
No.
you may not go out and drink beer together on the weekend, but when you're in a firehouse, you got to gel. You got to click and y'all got to be on the same wavelength. And I got to know and that your head is clear and you got to know that my head is clear too. You got to know that I'm sharp as a tack because it might come down to you coming to get me or me coming to get you actually on the fire ground. So, you know, we just got to be there for each other, man. Look out for one another.
Facts. Love it. Love it. Cap, I appreciate you coming on, man, and spreading really good words for individuals out there to, you know, about the fire service. Before we part, is there anything else you want to say to anyone listening?
Hey, I appreciate this. This is an honor, dude. I really do appreciate it. You know, all those guys out there that I mentioned, I do love you guys, and I am here because of you, Chief Floyd. That's a stone cold fact, and I ain't afraid to say it. That Fire Chief Spain, when I had my first interview with him, he looked at me and goes, "I don't know you, but you're here because of that man right there," and he pointed directly at Billy Floyd. So I owe a lot to that dude, and he's been a very good fire chief to us. And I'm privileged and I'm honored to work for this department. And just for you to take the time to talk to me, man, that's a big honor. Appreciate it.
Oh no, I appreciate you. Appreciate Chief Floyd for the hookup. I truly, I'm sure that there are many other Chief Floyds out there that just aren't heard of, but we need more Chief Floyds out there. We need more training captains like you out there that welcome outside training, welcome their men and women to go out there and do good work and just welcome overall love of the job and being there for one another. So can I truly appreciate you, sir?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.